You are listening to a colorful episode of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Episode 103 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 15th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my iOS brother, James Furlough.
Woohoo! Pumped!
Oh, did you just see what I just did there?
What? Oh my goodness.
Did you see what I just did there?
That is beautiful, man.
Did you see that?
That is a beauty. That is a beaut.
What? Yes.
I love it. Oh, man.
For those of you who are listening to it, I am currently wearing a Furlough Bros t-shirt. What?
That's awesome. See, we didn't even get early access.
I know, I had to order it after we unveiled it.
Yeah. Are we going to announce the winner soon of our contest? Because we never actually did that.
Were we going to announce? I didn't know about the announce part.
Do we not? Well, I mean, you know.
Thought we were just giving them away. Okay. We can talk about it offline.
So this week is not going to be the week that it'll happen, if it ever happens.
Yeah, so, yeah. But yeah, I got my t-shirt. I'm good to go.
Nice, I like it.
Looks nice. I get a lot of comments. Especially people, you'll appreciate this, they go, why is your face on that shirt?
Nice. You know what? That's exactly what I wanted to hear. See, I'm really going to confuse everybody because I made that shirt. I may not get that comment because I made that shirt 120 pounds ago and about 5 inches of beard ago.
Well, there's really only one way to find out, man. You got to get yourself one.
I'm doing it tonight, I swear.
Okay, good. All right, cool.
Of course, if our cousins are and family are correct, they'll ask me the same question, why is your face on that? But they'll be talking about Luigi and not Mario.
Oh, yeah, perhaps.
All of a sudden, they say that I look like you, and I'm like, I don't look that ugly. Anyways,
I'm just going to let that one go.
I appreciate that. You know, it's the older, mature James Furlough. But this week, we're not going to talk about family competitions. We're going to talk about technology in the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing, and Apple. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure that he just wanted to throw out there.
Yeah, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP's opinion of Apple or any other opinion.
If you'd like to follow us throughout the week, we do all sorts of cool things on the social media front, including about Tech Talk and other exciting things goings on in our life. If you want to follow us on the Twitter, I'm at Matthew D. Furlough. I'm NextWiggin4 on Instagram. Threw you off there, James.
It's okay. You know, I just went with it. I am at James Furlough on Twitter, James Furlough on Instagram, James Furlough on Facebook, JamesFurlough.com on the regular web, James Furlough and other places.
You know,
unless I'm not, in which case I'm Furlough Pro 27.
Let's say the reality of it is, if you were just to Google Matthew Dean Furlough or James Furlough, you'd get like all these hits, or better yet, go to furloughbros.com, where we have all sorts of clicks and links, including all the articles that we talk about this week, show cuts for each of the different stuff, a link to the YouTuber, and everything else that might tickle your fancy, that might want you, you know, you want to get into, you want to know about. It's all there. We host it. It's pretty awesome. I recommend you go and check her out. And you could also go back and listen to old episodes where we make predictions and they all come right.
Even when we disagree on a prediction, they both come right.
Yes.
which is a reference. Here's the teaser because we'll get into it a little later. But for the Apple announcement, we literally disagreed a little more I don't want to say this. You know, we weren't cutthroat at each other, but we disagreed.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, and Apple was kind enough to make both true. So, kind of, which is, you know, like a tie and horrible.
Yeah.
What was it they would always say in football? It was a tie is like kissing your sister.
Yep.
Got a kiss.
But oh, that's
so
weird.
That's how that went down.
But,
yeah. It is weird, which is a tie.
Yeah.
It's kind of how you feel about it. Like, yeah.
You know, it's funny. There is not a single, like, there's nothing less important. And, well, okay, there's a lot less important in life than your high school football record. That being said, it's pretty significantly unimportant. And tying the championship game my junior year, I barely even played in the game. But the fact that we tied still kind of hurts my soul. I would have rather just lost.
I have trouble empathizing with you.
Yeah, you know what? You just go away. I don't need to talk.
Because I didn't tie or lose.
Anyways, so this week we're going to talk about ever. Technology and the continuing
corporate opera. Straight wins 26 times.
Oh, man.
Okay, I'm done.
Thank you. Appreciate that. as I was saying. So this week, if you're listening last week, one of the things I was really kind of amped for, because I'd like to spend my money this way, but I want to wait till the latest generation, is I am super stoked for an Apple TV hardware update.
Yes, you are.
And I was kind of waiting anxiously for Tuesday, hoping that, you know, they might have something else special up their sleeves. I was doubtful, but now there's new rumors about it coming out on the 18th. Whatever. You know what? I don't even want to listen anymore.
On the 18th?
Yeah. They're talking about it going on sale with.
That's just like a firmware, like a software update. I mean, they're not doing SDK anything big, right? They're just, we're making improvements.
Yeah, well, they're saying that the new OS, the iOS 7, they're going to make a, they're going to do a big update to the Apple TV OS at the same time, which will coincide with new hardware. But who knows when they're actually going to make the announcement, what's going to look
well,
like.
Well, if Cook's definition of something new and amazing is the iPhone 5S, kind of shocked that they would just do a regular announcement and not, like, trump it out.
Yeah.
The tech folks. But anyways, Apple TV. So
I say all this to say Sony managed to step up to bat where Apple failed this week, and they launched a new mini TV thing, and it's actually kind of cool. It's called the PS Vita TV, and the long and short of what it is it's a PS Vita, but instead of a screen, it has an HDMI output, and it plugs into your TV, and it gives you the whole PS Vita ecosystem, which actually makes a lot of sense, because, I mean, you know, what is the PlayStation 3 if it weren't, you know, they're one of their big things is they like to turn these into media centers, right?
Right.
They want more than just games, and essentially what this is it's the media center with the ability to play PS Vita games and old school PS PlayStation games and PlayStation 2 games, I believe it can even do as new as that. And so they're launching that before the PlayStation 4 goes on sale. But it's this very low cost hardware introduction to the PlayStation universe ecosystem. That's kind of clever. I actually like it. And what people think is that this is a direct response to the fact that Apple's going to open up the SDK to allow for controllers to connect via Bluetooth to the Apple TV.
Controllers, you mean iPhones and iPads?
No, like video game controllers. Like, you can make hardware.
Really?
Like, buttoned hardware so that you can control, like, for example, a PlayStation controller. You'd be able to connect that via Bluetooth to an Apple TV so you can play
games. So that was just an example? Or are you talking about, like, a PlayStation or an Xbox controller?
That is an example of one of the types of controllers that you theoretically will be able to.
Okay, all right, I understand.
That's where the rumors are going and everything, and so presumably Sony, you know, with their industrial espionage, knows what Apple's doing behind closed doors, and so they kind of pre-launched this one as a. Back in the day, if you
but this
remember,
is only for Asia, right? It's not coming to the United States.
What?
Right?
I don't remember that part.
I just threw you, didn't I?
Yeah, I don't. Did I not?
Let's see here. Although Sony announced earlier today that the PS4 would come to Japan months later than the rest of the world, the PS TV, Vita TV looks like a good bet for the region. I could have sworn I read somewhere that it was.
It looks like it's launching
in Japan
first.
The initial announcement is focused on Japan, which exists as an entirely different media landscape. Oh, yeah, yes. If Sony can offer a similar content lineup for the PS Vita TV in the West. So far not here.
Yeah, which is a bummer. But I like it because, number one, you know, Sony quite famously, when the iPod Touch was first launched, when the SDK really – it's actually after the SDK and the whole apps – thing for the iPod Touch, you know, everybody started going out and buying iPod Touches instead of PS Vitas, and they said, you know, when confronted about it, PlayStation said, well, we're not worried about it because we don't compete with the iPod Touch, to which you're like, well, if people have $150 to spend or $200 to spend on hardware, and they're buying a iPod Touch to play games instead of a PS Vita to play games.
You're competing.
Yeah, you are by definition competing. So it's nice to see Sony not taking the wait and see approach to this one.
I really feel like you know, Sony has a new boss in this last year or so.
Yeah.
I remember they had their big shakeup, and you know, and I genuinely feel like they are making smart decisions now.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the last round or so, like this example that you were talking about, and even with the PS3, it was like they didn't. They were making good stuff, but they weren't competing well. They were missing some like obvious. Come on, guys, pay attention to what's happening to you. And now that it feels more holistic, like okay, you guys get it, and you're actively responding to competition. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. They had good reason to be confident, but they were acting with a tremendous amount of hubris, and it was really leaving some big gaps for them. And so yeah, I feel like this is not as big of a, you know, you're not seeing that this time around, which is exciting because, you know, Sony's a good company and they have good hardware, they have good products, and I hate to see them just get pummeled because they're not paying attention. And you know, this essentially is a, you know, it's an old school PlayStation with the, you know, Hulu and stuff. And honestly, like, you know, if they were to do it, well, you know, I'm, jeez, Apple has got me by the throat. You know, I'm, it's like, because my, you know, I come back to, it's like, you know, I get all this content from Apple, you know, and every week it feels like I go deeper down the rabbit hole. So the new season of, Avatar Korra, The Legend of Korra.
Really?
Just Friday, new episodes.
Really?
For season two. And I got the season pass through iTunes, so it downloads as soon as the show's done airing, so I can watch it on any one of my platforms. And it's like, what am I going to do? I'm going to get a PS Vita and then PS Vita TV and download the shows through iTunes, put it on a jump drive, drop it on. It's just, no, I'm not going to do that. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if I had a little more open of an ecosystem, I could see definitely wanting to jump stuff over to that. And I don't know, it's a cool price point, you know, makes sense. And it plays all the old PlayStation games, which is, you know, for those nostalgic folks, you know, there's a good, and, you know, I don't know, it's cool. It's a cool little thing. I'm glad to see Sony definitely stepping it up. And
it's priced to sell.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not a It's not throwaway Chromecast cheap, but I think it's a much better. It's a much better hardware offering, better hardware software lineup. You know, it doesn't mirror Chrome, which is kind of lame.
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking forward to it.
Nice job, Sony.
Yeah. What I want to do is dip my toe into the announcement.
Okay.
But we won't go there yet. Because I've noticed something happening.
Okay.
You know, when they announced iOS 7, people were like, it's going to change everything all over again. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, I'm finding this to be true, which is a little disconcerting. So there are two apps, one of which I actually use really regularly, and the other one I use semi-regularly. The first one being Reader, which is, care to guess what that does? it's an RSS reading app. I have the original version for iPhone, and it was kind of weird. They were pay. You buy an iPhone one, and then you had a separate iPad app, and then a separate Mac app, and you had to pay for each of them.
Oh, geez.
But once you bought it, you owned it, and you got free updates, whatever. Same with Clear. It's a to-do list type thing. You buy it, and then, you know, whatever. In all situations, I somehow managed to get mine for free, you know, wait for discounts or single-day promotions, and, you know, and you pick them up. But, you know, normally they're pay.
Yeah.
So both of these examples here, they said they're coming out with, you know, it's an iOS 7 specific app. For like with Reader, he's now coming out with a unified app, at least for the iPhone and iPad. But he's calling it Reader 2 as a new app that you buy for a couple bucks. And Clear is doing the same thing. Clear 2, iOS 7 centric. And again, you pay a couple bucks to buy them.
That's annoying.
Yeah. There's a part of me, though, that's like, you know, iOS 7 is genuinely different. It probably takes some time to re-architect it and, you know, make it look nice and whatever.
64 bits of niceness.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, in this one, the Reader guy, was it the Reader guy? No, it was the Clear guys, whatever, doesn't matter. You know, they're like, we would charge for a software update, but Apple doesn't allow us to do that, so we're just creating a new generation, and we'll stop supporting the other one, and, you know, whatever.
You know, it's funny. You know, the Apple, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Apple sets the standard that updates are free. And for them, it's really easy to, you know, we're going to make...
Most updates are free, right? iOS 7 will be free, but when they do a Mac update, it's not free.
Right. What I was going to say is, you know, it's like now they're giving away the iWork suite free, and it's like, oh, it's, you know, it's awesome because everything's free because we're making money hand over fist, and it's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're just an app developer and you require, you know, and you rely on one solid app, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, there is a long tradition and a reasonable one, I think, of, you know, having your base users pay for updates to, you know, you continue to do work on the apps. You know, why would you never get charged for it? If, you know, and I would argue that it's like, if that's going to be your model, then you should go to a subscription model. And, or, you know, it's like, because, you know, and I guess what my thought is, or you know, because there's this weird world, right? It's like, if you look at the internet is constantly updating. Every time you connect to the server, you get the latest update. You right. don't keep old versions. And so in some ways, the app ecosystem reflects that. In other ways, it doesn't. And so I think if you were to kind of just go off of the basis that we're going to reflect the internet model where it's free to use the service or the product, and you get continual updates, you know, or, you know, you pay once or a subscription. I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird world. And I don't hold them against them for trying that. But, you know, the thing is that if you do that, now it gives a bunch of people an excuse to go and try a different product. I mean, you've got to be really confident.
That's true.
You know, that your product is the best one out there, that people are going to continue to pay for it. It's a risk, and it gives other people an opportunity to compete.
Well, I can tell you exactly what happened to me with the Reader app. I was using their current iPhone app, reading my RSS news, and I read that article on my reader app. Okay?
Right.
I read it, went, shut down my reader app, removed it from my tray at the bottom, which has the persistent four apps, and replaced it with the Feedly app, and went, okay.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I use the Feedly app, and it is it's a great little app, you know, and it's free.
But there's a situation, right, where he came out. I mean, I actively, you know, hours use this app, which probably means, you know, in some ways, oh, James, just pay for it. But that's the risk, exactly what you were talking about, where you get someone like me who goes, man, there's another option. It's free. Why wouldn't I decide that I dislike that one? Which Feedly only has one really annoying habit, which I don't know how to fix, and I'm not going to worry about it. But and quite frankly, Reader opened web pages weird, and sometimes you couldn't save them, and that was annoying. But that's a different story altogether. You know, so it wasn't absolutely perfect to the point where I was like, oh, I love this, I have to have it. You know, there was some wonkiness to it, just enough that I let it go. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's like you said, you got to be really confident. And the Clear app is one that I honestly use it as a way to track some projects and things that I don't want in my normal to-do flow. Like, if we got work we're doing on the duplex, I put it in there. That way I just have a running tab of what it is, and it's not stuck in my normal flow of things. But it's interesting that, one developer does it, you go, okay, fine. You know, whatever, they're trying stuff. You get two who kind of announce it, and they don't seem like they're playing off each other. You're like, huh, there's something here.
You want to know something really fascinating?
I do. I would love to know something fascinating.
So back in the day, I got a free version of Tetris, and I thought it was one of the best Tetris apps, and it was made by Electronic Arts, as they own the rights, and the dude who actually made Tetris has made pennies off of it over the eons, because he was a communist, and that's what he gets. But EA currently owns rights. They made an app, they put it out there, and they decided they weren't making enough money off of it because it's Tetris and they should make more money off of it. So they started doing some wonkiness where they did exactly what you were talking about, where they were going out and they were pushing out different apps, and they were like, they discontinued support of the one that I had, but if you had it, you could still play it. So I kept playing it. And for like 3 years, it went on that, like, that. I mean, I've had this app forever. And about 6 months ago, they started updating the app again. Because for whatever reason, the user base on that app was big enough where they decided, you know what, and, you know, maybe we add ads, maybe we do something, but they, you know, seems worthwhile to support this user base again. And so they came back around. Wow. I don't know. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's, you know, you might find that, you know, they realize that that was a terrible decision. It's dramatically hurting our usage. People are using other products, and they you know, turn course. And if you bought both apps, you're up a creek. And if you didn't, you know, you get support again. So, you know, it's interesting watching developers, like you said, you know, it's the creative destruction of capitalism, as it were called, and you know, that allows that, you know, all these different people trying different stuff out, and we're still early enough in the, you know, app economy where people are still figuring out the best way to try to monetize this over the lifetime of a company. You know, one company that hasn't figured it out, Zynga. A huge long article that was mostly depressing and not terribly interesting about why they've completely collapsed, and but basically they didn't actually come up with any fun games was the long and short of the problem. They kept buying people with fun games that really only have user attention spans for about 20 minutes. And it turns out you can't make money off of that.
Well, it was like you did. And those people who developed them made the money during the ramp up. And then Zynga bought them. You know, they always bought high. They never bought low.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That was the long and short of it. It was like terrible mismanagement. And it was like, the one things that internal employees were saying is it's like they had these, you know, they weren't trying to build better machines. They had these money-making machines. They're like, help us oil it so we can keep turning out money. Like, yeah, but the machine's already broken down. So how is oiling it going to help? But
makes it slippery.
Anyways, so it's fun to see everybody trying to figure out how to not starve to death while making apps, you know. And Apple's given them this new opportunity.
So they're going to try it, which makes sense. So Apple, speaking of Apple.
Yeah.
they had an event on the Tuesday.
You know, I totally missed it. I didn't even pay attention to it this week at all. It's not true at all. I paid attention to it way more than I should have.
I know. You kept texting me throughout my meeting. Of seven people that I went to, just for the record. I went to it, and I paid attention, and I fully engaged in said meeting.
And
I didn't even look at the stream. Now, I had them minimized so that when the second the meeting ended, pop, ready to go.
That's awesome.
But they were minimized.
That's awesome. Yeah, I...
Now, and I will... And I, let me just clarify that. Yes, they... That implies more than one Windows, because you know what? I like what The Verge does, but I also like what Engadget does. You know, and they both do their thing a little differently. They both take little different angles. I like Engadget. I found posts a little bit faster.
Yeah.
And they tend to add a little bit more color commentary.
Yeah.
About it, but The Verge does take more pictures.
I think I was on TechCrunch. The whole time.
You could do that too. You could do
TechCrunch. TechCrunch. And Mac Daily News, because, you know, the king of the fanboys.
Yeah.
I was like reading what they had to say. So Apple launched a couple new or announced a couple new products.
They are now launched. Well,
iOS 7. Mm-hmm. The iPhone 5C, which doesn't stand for cheap, and I thought was interesting is they didn't tell you what it stood for. They just kind of threw that one out there. It's the 5C, you know, like the five, the,
color.
The 3GS.
Color.
Did they say that? Yeah. I don't think they said it. What?
That come on, we all know that's what it means, right?
But I know. What's weird is that like they were emphatic with the 3GS that what it stood for was 3G. Speed, you know. So when the 4S came out, it was the 4 speed, and you know. But it's you know, I don't know. It's just one of those weird little flares that you're like, didn't bother anyways. they announced. We all kind of knew that was coming, especially if you were listening to this show. They're gonna the 5C.
I've total random thought. I had a friend who was like, man, it was just such a boring thing. He's like, I was bored during the live blog, and then I was bored when I rewatched it on the video stream. I was like, really? So boring you watched it twice?
Yeah, I know, really?
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. People.
But anyway, so they before we get too deep into it, announced two phones. They got the color. There's, what, five colors?
Yeah.
It's plastic with a metal.
No, it's not frame. Plastic, James. It's polycarbonate.
That looks like plastic, but feels solid or whatever. And then they got the S, which is the metal background with gold.
Not champagne, yeah.
Yeah, which you think they would have called it that because they also had space gray, which is different than normal gray. And then what was the other one? It was silver or slate or
it's silver, space gray. And gold. You know, it was champagne. I guarantee it was champagne. And all of a sudden, they and the champagne lawyers, we talked about this, the champagne lawyers were like, don't call it that. And Apple went, you know what? We could, but that would just be a headache not worth fighting when we can just call it gold.
Yeah. You know?
And I think that's the sort of thing that Steve Jobs would have decided, no, we're going to call it champagne, and then would have called it champagne. And that had been the long and short of it.
Yeah.
And,
what about like Jimmy? whatever.
But, I can say, but I think Tim Cook is a little more discerning, and probably wisely. That's not necessarily one of those details that, especially
but it's
because
it's not as fun for us, you know.
It's
I'm
not
the drama.
Exactly. And the whole point of it is, you know, I think part of it is it's supposed to be gold. I mean, they would have called it champagne for us, but everybody I've talked to who actually has spent any time in China says, like, their first reaction is, oh, my gosh, that's going to sell like crazy in China. Like, why?
Really?
They love the gaudy gold stuff. I mean, you walk in, like a cheap Chinese, like, store, everything is plasticky gold. It just –
really?
It, culturally, yeah, culturally – it, Chinese people love it, I guess. It's just it's like a, you know, whereas we think it's kind of, oh, that's cliche. What's really funny, though, is everything I've read, and I've read a ton of articles about people talking about, like, what colors they're going to get. And everybody starts off by saying, well, gold is just so gaudy. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I can't believe anybody would actually buy it, but I haven't taken it off the table yet. I might get it. Actually, I'm thinking I'm gonna get it.
You got a gold line on your headphone there. So
I know I would get the gold one. It's funny when are you getting it?
When are you buying it? Friday.
So this is the deal. I bought a Honda Civic today.
That's true.
So I will not be buying it this week. We're gonna wait a couple weeks and see where my finances kind of settle. So,
all right. Okay. All right. Well, once you sell your old car, you'll have some cash.
Yeah, that's probably not gonna be enough.
Did you see there was a YouTube video? I think I don't even know if I could find it fast enough. Here. All right. I'm gonna patience.
Is this the Conan one?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Did you let's see here. Watch history. Let's see here. I got a whole bunch of birthday videos I was watching so I could send it to Lisa.
Happy birthday, Lisa. We know you're not listening to this show because you never do, but you know. Happy birthday.
I don't see it. What do you think? If I go
is this right?
No, it should be.
You're cutting in and out. You can't talk while you type.
Oh, that's right. Gold iPhone.
Up of the dictating between typing so that you can hear it. That's come on, Google. And let us turn that off. This drives me crazy. I wish it was a setting you could turn off. I can't believe you can't.
Each detail of the 5S is meticulously designed, engineered, and crafted in a way that no iPhone has been before.
No two fingerprints are alike, so we thought, with 5S, why not use them as passwords?
And the 5S is the first iPhone to be offered in the color gold. To achieve this aesthetic, we went outside of our core team of designers.
Yes.
Yeah, gold is best. You think gold, you think other best stuff. Jet ski, nice watch, sports car, shrimp.
This guy's got a big gold chain.
I just want to make it clear.
Big gold chain, like this purple jacket.
Windbreaker, yeah.
It's cheap. Camera is best.
Regardless of the exterior colors, all the phones are equally as powerful on the inside.
No. Come on. Gold is best.
Just fun. Goofy.
What I think is funny, though, is it's like everybody, like, they have their color that they're like, you know, they take it off the table, right? You know, they're like, definitely not going to have it be black. Definitely not going to have it be white for whatever reason. But nobody seems to be taking the gold one off the table. And I think this all goes back to the idea that Apple's not stupid. They're really smart. And they know, realized that they made a mistake with the 4S, which was they didn't make a color that differentiated it as the new phone. There was no way to tell from a distance that it was the cool one. And so they, you know, that you spent the money, that you have the latest generation, that you're the one with the cool software. You know, it's funny. Like, I downloaded iOS 7, which I will talk about later. And I've been using it this whole week, and it's funny. I turn on the phone, and people go, what is that? You know, and it's like, and it makes me feel special and cool and in the know, because I got the developer's license, so I was able to download it early, you know, and I get to tell
Wait,
them.
So I got a question about that.
Yeah.
Did you actually pay the $99 to get the developers? Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. I did. I went big.
Got it.
I figure I'm going to be publishing. I might as well do it.
Got it.
And so, yeah, so I get the, so, you know, and but it, like, it, you know, it gives you that cool, special feeling. I mean, and I realize it's so shallow. It's so incredibly shallow, but we respond to that so quickly. And I really do believe that that's the reason why people aren't taking the gold one off the table, even as they make fun of it, because they, this is like, ugh, I kind of want people to know. And it's funny. I laugh with friends that are like, what color should I get? And I was like, I'd get the gold. Like, really? You'd get the gold? I'm like, oh, definitely. I'm like, why would you get the gold? Because I want everybody to know that I have the cool new phone. That's why. I hate to be that shallow, but it's part of the fun is, and if I'll tell you what, if they made a 64 gig one with the gold and it was only, or, you know, if they made like a red anodized shell with the gold 64 and you had to get the 64 to get it, I'd get the 64 with the red anodized shell just so that I could say, guess what I spent my money on? it's so stupid. It's so stupid, but it's like that stuff works. And I bet they sell the gold like crazy. I bet it just, they go absolutely nuts with it because, you know, number one, China's going to love it. Number two, America's going to love it, even though nobody wants to admit it. Why'd you get the gold? I don't know. It just looked nicest on the shelf. Yeah, sure. That's what it was. The fact that they just changed the name but didn't actually change the color of the other two, which that's another stupid thing. I don't actually get why they did that. Like, this, I what I can't figure out is if they're actually different colors. But I don't think they are, because the back of my white iPhone 5 looks awfully silver. and if you look at the black iPhone 5, it doesn't look really black. It looks kind of space grayish.
Well, maybe they were just, you know, fixing their color scheme. Yeah. You know, they were calling it what it really is this time around.
Yeah, and that's what I think it is. I think they just changed the names, and everyone's going to be like, oh, look at the difference in the colors. It's not different, guys. It's the same colors. Am I taking crazy pills?
great movie, by the way.
Thank you. I don't know. So that was the review of the iPhone 5S colors. I thought one of the
love it.
Yeah.
So the iPhone 5C, for standing for five colors, which is basically just the iPhone 5 but with plastic shells. Sorry, polycarbonate shells. I thought that one kind of threw everybody for a loop. I had bought into the idea that it was going to be a cheap iPhone. I got that totally wrong. Seeing how it cost the exact same as what you'd expect a second generation iPhone 5 to cost. Or, you know, the previous generation phone.
Yeah, which I love reading stuff, right? Like you were talking about, everyone and their brother was, it's a cheap iPhone, it's for developing countries, they got that China event coming up, that's when they'll announce it, you know, or go into it more or something. You know, and it comes out, no, it's not. And then instantly people are like, yep, new Apple would never do that because it's you know, they're an aspirational brand, and they're just keeping with their whatever. And you're just like, yes, I love the tech community. We change our minds so fast. So the question that people have been asking is why?
And I think there's a really good answer.
I got like multiple ones, so let me hear what you think the answer is.
So my guess is, and this is where my gut goes, and I think it's the most – There's two things that are going on. Number one, the polycarbonate shell is cheaper to manufacture, which is, you know, true. There's, you know, believe it or not, there's only a limited amount of aluminum in the world, and Ford is buying a tremendous amount of it. And Apple's got huge reserves, but I'm sure they want to stretch it as far as possible because they make everything out of aluminum. And
that's a good reason.
Yeah. And so I think that's part of it. Obviously, the polycarbonate is going to be cheaper. Plastic is cheaper, tends to be. It's a little bit sturdier. But I think the real reason, the biggest reason, is that if the iPhone 5 existed in its current state, side by side with the iPhone 5S, and it was only $100, I think people would buy the 5 instead of the 5S.
That's what happened with the 4 and the 4S.
Exactly. And what was crazy is the 4 and the 4S have been the best-selling phones, you know, have sold like crazy and have eaten into, ate into the 5 sales over the last year. My best friend growing up, man, he bought a 4 because it was free. I was like, dude, it's a 4. They're going to come out – this is like 2 months ago. They're going to come out with the new phone – literally in 2 months, and the 4S will be free. It was like, I know, but you know, it kind of looks the same. It's got
no.
Let me give you the $100 so you can get the better phone. But you know, it's one of those things where there's a lot of that going on, and I think what they really wanted to do is they really wanted to make it so that if you bought the cheaper phone, it felt like you were buying the cheaper phone. Hmm. And they were going to pitch it as this great, you know, no man, it's this
new
thing.
What they do.
It's awesome. Everything we do is great. It's the greatest thing ever. But I think they really wanted to differentiate the second, you know, the N plus one generation, or sorry, the N minus one generation phone, as a distinctly different offering. And if this works, if 5S sales are higher in proportion than to the 5 and the 4S, I think you're going to see this as a trend where next year the 5C internals will be replaced with the 5S internals of this year. And then
so what would they call it?
The 5CS, crime scene investigators.
Yeah,
And
well, okay, all right. So the two theories that I've heard, which I think both are wrong, but intriguing nonetheless. the first one is, which is kind of similar to where you were talking about, where they're in some ways, what's that word? People use it all the time. Bifurcating.
Mm.
I hate that word, but it's...
Why do you hate that word?
I don't know. It just seems like you're trying too hard to be smart.
You know what the weird part about it is? It's definitely a dental word. It's actually, I was meant to...
Is it? Statisticians use it all the time.
Well, it actually got started with like I'm not an entomologist, so I might be wrong in this one, but from what I've read, it actually started as a reference to when teeth shatter, break in half, and that's where it really, at least you know, there's probably an entomologist in our audience that's going, first off,
no,
stop it, go away.
Yeah,
but that's away. Yeah.
So, but anyways, that's the word, bifurcation.
Yeah.
Essentially splitting into two lines, a consumer line and a pro line. And if you think about the MacBook line, you had the consumer plastic line, then you had the pro aluminum line. And that was, you know, visually how they distinguished between the two, and then the internal hardware is also, you know, you had the pro pushing the envelope, taking it further. Then you had the consumer, which was, you know, still good internals, still, you know, they would claim better than any PC, but not as, you know, not as intense, not as crazy as the Pro line. And it, you know, in this case, it's colorful, it's fun, it's, you know, for a consumer, not for the serious office professional folks. It's not quite that big of a distinction yet, but it could potentially be the start of that process of going down these two lines. And I could see like what you're talking about where, you know, the 6 or you know, whatever they're going to call it is the next gen, where the 5C gets it and it comes down like we've seen. And, you know, so it still looks the same, but the way that they market it and the way they talk about it could start to be different. Just like with the iPod Touch, you know, they made some changes, they opened up the SDK, and then it wasn't until a year later where they started talking about it as a gaming device.
Right.
And, you know, because they started to see the sales and the trends.
I don't think they knew it was a game. Well, they've come out and said, we didn't expect that. That caught us by surprise.
Right, well, and I could see a similar deal here where they're like, man, the 5C is selling like crazy. to consumers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's a fun, playful device. And now all of a sudden they're like, hey, the 5C, fun, playful device.
Right.
Go buy it, consumers. For you professionals out there who want to take good photographs and want to do serious gaming or something.
Yeah.
You know, the Pro line, that's where you're at, which, you know, I would not be shocked to see it be called an iPhone Pro. You know, Pro 6 or something. I don't know. So that's one theory that I've heard, which you're like, okay, on the surface, it kind of fits in. It has some history behind it. I could see that. And the other one, which I think is more fun and gets more to that, like, back-end corporate opera type stuff, which is why I like it, is this is obviously the first round where Johnny Ive has had a say in not only the hardware but the software. And from the hands-on reviews and people talking about it, they sit there and say that iOS 7 was made for the 5C. They're like, the colors, I mean, they talk about it in the video, but they're like, man, when you look at them, you're like, yes, the colors match, like, perfectly.
Yeah.
And you know, especially when they do the different backgrounds, which are like, you get all the backgrounds in the phone, they just, you know, preset the background that goes with your phone.
Right.
They're like, it just looks awesome, like a complete 100% device. And like, in, if you remember, Johnny Ive's big, like, first claim to fame were the colorful, translucent iMacs. You know, they came in five colors. And, you know, and so they were like, maybe this is Johnny Ive's, like, all right, man, you know, that's my phone. And even some conspiracy theorists will go as far as to say, if you watch both videos side by side or one right after another, you can go, clearly he's more excited about the 5C than he is about the 5S from a simple design standpoint.
See, you know, it's stupid. I thought you were going to say some conspiracy theories are suggesting that Johnny Ives killed Jobs, but that's not where you went with that.
No. I wasn't going that far.
You know, it's funny. You know, I'm that wouldn't shock me at all, actually, if all of
so the so all that to say that. Is, you know, and in some ways, yeah, Jobs isn't around anymore, and he is in charge of all this. So he goes, we're doing plastic colors. That's what I want. I'm the man. I'm in charge. I have more power than anybody else in Apple, even Tim Cook. And so I want a plastic colorful iPhone. So that's what we're going to do.
It's funny. It's funny that you would say that, because like 6 months ago, or 3 months ago, when iOS 7 was announced and everybody downloaded the first beta of it, there was all those things about how, like, clearly Johnny Ives basically said, look, you guys can do whatever you want with the color palette. I don't care. And gave it over to the advertising team. There was some evidence and basically just let the advertising team. When it's like, and now all of a sudden you're like 3 months later, and you're like, no, clearly Johnny Ives handpicked the colors. He did all the he did the graphic design himself, because he's that involved with it all. Which, like, you guys are crazy.
Like, but, I said, man, we're great at flipping, just like that.
It just says, as soon as somebody has.
Oh, I knew it all along. I knew it all along.
It's funny, you know. I would say this. I think Johnny Ives loves different color stuff. I think he gets a kick out of that. Uh-huh. Now, at the same time, he loves the clean, you know, screwless aluminum, you know, unibody look. Like, he likes both of them. He's got a soft spot for both of them. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's more excited about the 5Cs than the iPhone 5S, because he's been doing the same. He didn't redesign the iPhone 5S. It's
true.
The same body. I said I worked on that a year ago. That's boring. All they did was go and get a different anodizing color. Yeah. Cool, guys. Have fun. You know, I made sure that there was a metal ring around the home button that serves an electronic functional purpose that, like, I couldn't get away from, you know. And I took away the square on the home button. How exciting.
Whereas, is there more square on there?
I
haven't been.
From what
I was, I have not done as much reading as I would like to. I did a ton on Tuesday, Wednesday, but this weekend I was at Man Camp, which was a getaway essentially for a lot of men in the church.
Nice.
So I tried as hard as I could to be unplugged, which I tried. I tried. That involved no news. That was about as far as I got.
So I think
all that to say, I haven't really had an opportunity to look at close-up pictures and really dive into it. So no home screen. Did they move any of the other buttons on the side to really drive? Not home screen, home
button,
square button thing.
Yeah.
Do they move any other buttons to just drive people and accessory manufacturers nuts?
Not that I know of. No one's mentioned that. It's right. As far as you know, they didn't really get in. I don't know.
Not
the
yet.
Same body. As far as I know for you, you say the 4 and the 4S are not the same body.
They're not the same body. I don't have to say anything. Just put them next to each other.
I'll agree with you. I'll agree with you. They
Thank
are not
you.
Technically the same body. But
they're different.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And
I'm still bitter about it.
You know what? I get that.
Is that all the accessory manufacturers were too lazy and cheap to design a proper case. They're like, oh, we'll just do the same ones. They're close enough. So what if the plastic hits the buttons? Big deal. Yeah, well, it is like a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I feel you.
You get me all worked up about something I shouldn't be.
I know. I do it on purpose. Let's talk about same.
I literally took a Dremel tool to an old iPhone 4 case that supposedly worked for both so that I could get it centered.
I know you did. I think Johnny Ives is excited because he got to redesign a new phone. I think that excites him. And from everything I've heard, there is a definitive design correlation between iOS 7 and the iPhone 5C. They were meant to go together. That being said, I think they're trying to not have the iPhone 5 cannibalize 5S sales. I think they want people to move on to the 5S. I really do, yeah.
But I guess it all depends on how much cheaper it is to build them. You know, I realize there's a $100 discount, but, you know, I don't know. They may not be horribly, horribly torn if people buy a lot of them if it's cheaper
And you know, one of the things that I come up with is I don't, you know, obviously plastic's cheaper to manufacture than metal, but I think maybe when you sell a million of them, it's not marginal. But it's not like, you know, they overcharge for hard drive space so incredibly much. That you know, it makes up for it in the wash, I think, in a lot of ways. And I just get the feeling that, you know, we make a bigger deal about it being cheaper to manufacture.
You just don't think it's really that cheaper.
Especially with the whole, like, with the fact that they've got a stainless steel back in it, and then they put plastic over it. I mean, it's not actually a, you know, a cheap plastic back. It's a, you know, it's a piece of metal with a cool cover on it.
But there's other things, right? It's a different older camera. There's no touch thing.
iPhone 5 camera. It's the new LED, the double LED. It's got the same.
Is it the double LED?
Yeah, it's the double LED.
Wow.
That's another upgrade they made over the iPhone 5. So
nice.
It's better than that.
Nice.
But it's, you know, I don't know. From a hardware perspective, it's.
So you're saying you don't want to get a 5C. I'm not getting the vibes of excitement about it.
I wouldn't. I mean, but I have an iPhone 5, so that would be really foolish of me, since it's basically the same phone. It's got a bigger battery.
Little
which
LED,
is cool.
Bigger
it's
battery.
Got,
yeah, that's nice.
And they did do that. They put a bigger battery in it, which was kind of them. And it's not a big enough upgrade to really justify at all, not even close. Especially since I've got a 64 gig iPhone 5, and they don't make those in the 5Cs. It's an interesting question. I'm looking forward to see what sells out or how sales go. I think that's going to be really fascinating. They sold out of the yellow iPhone 5C, on Thursday, which was the first one to sell out, which everyone was really surprised by because most like early
polling showed that was the least popular color, which I saw somebody make the argument that, well, that was probably what Apple saw internally as well. And so they made the smallest run of the yellow iPhone 5. And that's why it sold out first. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I guess that would be foolish for us to think that they have the same numbers for all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
But I, you know, that's, yeah, I can see that. I was thinking that way, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, you're watching those numbers, I think it'll be, Apple's trying something new. It's exciting.
So, and if I remember correctly, they allowed for pre-sales of the 5C, but not for the 5S.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And I think one of the reasons for it is because they don't want everybody to know how fast they're going to sell out. I think they're going to sell out crazy fast because they're having low yield rates on the fingerprint scanner. And there's just going to be everything I've read says there's going to be really, really constrained supply. Now, obviously, we all got that horribly wrong with the iPhone 5C. So this might be way off base too, but we'll see. It would make sense that that would be the problem, and it also encourages people to show up at the store and wait in line, which really looks great for Apple. To have people sitting out there wanting to buy this phone instead of all the fanatics instead of just going online, because this is the thing: you go online, you try to buy it at midnight. If you can't buy it at midnight, you show up at the store at 8 a.m. And I think that might have something to do with it, but no clear clear I'm doing it for this reason that I've seen. But so I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in the 5S, because they made some cool little things. Number one, let's talk about predictions. You said that the fingerprint scanner would be meant specifically for
security
for enterprise.
Yep.
And then I said it was going to be for purchasing purposes, for spending yo money, security for like an e-wallet.
I was going to say an e-wallet. You were really thinking of point of sales,
right?
Type of stuff, right?
Right.
The bridge between physical purchases and, right?
Right. Now, I would say this, first and foremost, I appreciate you saying that I got it right, but I don't feel like I got it right. Now, granted, you can use it for your iPhone or your iTunes sales, which you can buy an awful lot of garbage through iTunes nowadays, which is pretty cool.
True.
And it's heading that direction, but there is not an API call for the security fingerprint,
True.
Which means that PayPal and Square can't add that to their app as a necessary verification step. They can't. Which is kind of what I envisioned would happen. Would you'd have Square would do something or PayPal would do something, and you'd hold your thumb there and it would verify it, using iBeacons and NFC and it might not be a first party Apple thing, but a third party could take advantage of that. And they didn't do that, right? They ain't gonna do that. So I feel like you're heading down that direction. I read somebody who said. I read someone who kind of is in my camp that was surprised that they didn't do that, and they were of the belief that, maybe this is – Apple didn't think people would trust it enough. And so what they did was they essentially launched it. People are going to start using it. Once they trust it, then they'll open it up for, APIs and other stuff, which is possible. And it's entirely possible that Apple doesn't trust it internally, as scary as that sounds. And they don't want the debacle of – somebody cracking it in the first year and being able to take advantage of they don't want to tether. They want to do, or they're looking at this as a giant beta,
Maybe. Okay.
That's
a
possible.
A beta from a use case standpoint, not
right,
necessarily
exactly.
A technology proof standpoint.
Right. Make sure okay. that, once you actually open it up to the wild, all of a sudden people are going to try to get into it, and there's enough value in being able to crack that system, especially for stolen, for black market stolen iPhones, that'll give people a really compelling reason to try to figure out the weaknesses of the of the fingerprint scanner without having the added problem of people's entire bank accounts being tied to that physical device. So, you know, that might be it. I don't know. I would say that they're testing the water, and you know, that's the direction everybody's going, but clearly the intention was a big security thing, and they really pumped it up as this is great for governments, this is great for enterprise, this is great for, you know, banks, this is, you know, security. I think
enterprise-class security, yeah.
Exactly. And I think one of the interesting things is, and I was glad to hear that they made a big deal about this right at the beginning, is that the actual circuitry that does all the verification, the chip that does the verification, and the actual capacitive touch scanner are a discrete system from the rest of the chip.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit confusing because they actually built it into the die of the A7, so it's into the main. It's like a separate core, and essentially what it does, it's not this simple, but it either reads a 1 or a 0. The operating system says, is this fingerprint good? And the chip inside it says yes or no, and that's the extent of the communication between the main core and that discrete chip. And that discrete chip does all the storage of the fingerprints, all the reading of the fingerprints, the verification, and all the different learning stuff that it does. It's in charge of all that good stuff. But oh, it's interesting. Everybody says it's like, you know what?
Finish your sentence.
I'm going to say, everybody who's tested it says it's like, it's seamless, which is what it had to be, you know?
That's what makes Apple, right? It just works. You don't have to, it's not wonky. I read this cool article that was, said, Fingerprints and Passwords, a Guide for Non-Security Experts. Which I was like, that's me.
Yeah.
And it was super interesting. This guy was like, you know, he started out with like, what are some of the advantages of a, you know, a password versus say biometrics or a fingerprint, you know? And he was like, you know, some of them, like with a biometric, you don't have to remember anything, you know?
Right. Which is nice.
That's nice. And he's like, he says it can be used on every system, whereas a password requires a unique password. You don't have to, he goes, one thing that they both share, you don't have to carry anything around, which is nice. Biometrics, he goes, they're faster. You know, you just swipe and you're going instead of typing in instead of typing something in. He said, let's see here. One problem though, is that they're susceptible. Biometric is susceptible to false positives. Whereas you're not going to get a false positive with a password. You type it right or you don't. Some other stuff. Oh, he goes, one, you know, potentially bad one, it's impossible to change. Whereas, you know, with a password, you can. You can't share it between users.
You're allowed to scan up to 5 fingers, which means you can have 5 unique users. But if you're not one of those 5, yeah, that's a problem.
Another one, he was like, you're less likely to – it's – biometrics, again, is less likely to be used without your knowledge.
Yeah.
Very true. He was going, nice part about passwords, it's cheap to implement.
Yeah.
It's easy. See here. Oh, you know, and kind of along those same lines, they work anywhere, including browsers and mobile phones. You know, whereas biometrics, obviously, because of the software or the hardware part of it, makes it tough. Passwords it's a mature security practice, whereas biometrics is still evolving, and it's proprietary at this point, whereas passwords are non-proprietary. I thought this was, what was another one? With a password, it's susceptible to just a brute force attack, whereas, I don't know, you could have a pretty brute force attack on your finger, but,
it's so funny. I gotta address this now, because that's like the two things that people have been saying that have been driving me nuts is it's like,
okay, you know, great. Now the government's going to love this more than anybody because now they've got a giant database of fingerprints. And, like, this goes back to the discrete chip thing of it's impossible to get to that data. You literally
well, I was thinking brute force in the sense that they beat you up.
I know. Give me a second. I'm not quite there. Oh, yeah. Okay, I see where you're going. But they're like, you literally have to break it. There's no way to access the data. Number one, it's encrypted, which I'm not even sure why you would do that. But number two, you have to, like, shave open the chip and, like, get in with little things and touch the, you know, like, there's no way to access the data. The data is physically separate from the rest of the system. And everybody was like, well, now your fingerprint's saved into the phone, so people can get your fingerprint if they steal your phone. And you're like, okay, remember what I just said about it being a discrete chip?
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, well, maybe if somebody is saying, like, they could just cut your thumb off, you know, if they want your fingerprint. I was like, this is so ridiculous. You guys realize that you sit there and touch the phone, leaving your fingerprint all over the phone. All you have to do is fingerprint the phone, and then you have a fingerprint.
Well, it's like not only your phone, but your glass, your car, your doorknob. It's everywhere.
So
I'm with you there. Another one that they were talking about, like a nice part about passwords, is that they cannot personally identify you.
Yeah.
Whereas they could with a biometric. We talked about the multiple accounts thing. A password can be forgotten, and it dies with the person.
Technically, the fingerprint does too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah, it's true. Whereas, like with biometrics, it is susceptible to injuries, aging, and death as well.
Oh, I didn't even thought about that. I never even thought about that. But it's like, how often do you somebody like chop up their thumb woodworking, and all of a sudden, you know, you're like at a table saw, and all of a sudden you can't access your phone because you cut through your thumb. Oh my gosh, I never even. That's horrible. That's the insult to injury part of that one. That one's wow, that's rough. I mean, I'd almost want to do like my pinky as my secondary finger just in case my thumb gets shot off.
But so I thought that was an interesting list that, you know, in the end, passwords do have benefits. Just like biometrics. And this guy's conclusion, which I thought was the most interesting, he goes, if you truly want to be secure, he goes, they talk about you do two-factor identification. You don't just do one, you do two. And he's like, so if you really want it to be safe, you do a biometric and a password.
That's what I've read.
And he's like, and quite frankly, if you also have a phone, he goes, it's in some ways triple authentication, where you have your biometric, which is you yourself are there. You have your password, which is the knowledge about it. But then it's your phone, which means you got to have the device as well. And he's like, you do that, man, you're so encrypted, no one's going to mess with you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Which, you know, there's a lot of validity to that. And I think, I like it because we're definitely heading in the right direction from a security perspective. You know, there's still the problem of backdoors being put in explicitly to be taken advantage of by our friendly government. But, you know, it's not a it's the right direction.
Yeah, so anyways, that was some of the – I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
They talked about that.
I think one of the interesting factors here is that nobody, and I mean nobody, has come out in the last week and said, guess what, we're going to have a fingerprint scanner too. Now, some would argue that's because there are already Androids out there with fingerprint scanners.
Are there?
But yeah, that's part of the reason why everyone was like, Apple innovating? That's not innovation. Dells have had that since 2007, and they're like 2% of users actually use it because it was terrible.
I think I got one on my HP machine. Yeah, I do, right there.
Yeah, and Android.
I'm gonna say how to use it.
Yeah, Android has HTC came out with one, and it was really, really limited success. You know, the big thing here though is it's by most accounts, Authentech, the guys that actually made this chip, it was the most advanced chip on the market before Apple bought it, and they've done, you know, further
development with it. So, you know, it's I would say chances are this one's going to be a really good version of it. It'll be the gold standard. You know, that's, even if you don't get the gold iPhone. And then,
but which the, I noticed the, on the home button again, it had a gold ring.
Yeah.
Is that the case, claim, no matter what color you get?
Yeah. I think the color changes, if I'm not mistaken,
right,
of the ring to based on the phone that you get. But that ring is necessary for some part of the biometric process. I don't actually know.
I don't understand.
So the other big hardware update, the new phone. They did not increase the megapixel count from 8 megapixels. It's staying at 8. But they did increase the pixel size.
Because bigger pixels equal better pictures.
And you want to know who knows that better than Apple? HTC. Because this is the best part. Apple isn't even the king of pixel size. HTC is. HTC has pixels that are like... So Apple went from like 1.2 or 1.3 nanometers and up to 1.5, which is a huge increase. Well, HTC has got one that's got 2 nanometer pixel sizes.
Oh, wow.
The HTC One has it, and this is the crazy part, it's a 4 megapixel camera. Because, and I thought this was really interesting, this goes back to the whole idea of a retina displays. At 4 megapixels, you've really kind of, you can do 1080p. You know, you can get a full... So basically what they said is we want to be able to do 1080p pictures, but we want to have the highest quality 1080p possible. So they kept it at 4 megapixel and just made the sensor gigantic, which gave them a lot of really, really, really good color palette. Now, obviously, Apple just knocks everybody away when it comes to image processing and stuff, and they have the image processor inside the A7 is just insane, I guess. And it's a huge improvement over the A6 image processor, which was the best on the market. But it's you know, it sounds like they've done some stuff in there that's, you know, really keeping them cutting edge. Obviously, the huge perk of the 1020, the Lumia 1020 41 megapixel camera is the digital zoom, which is what I want. Want it so bad I can't stand it.
I know. I feel you.
So the digital zoom on the iPhone 5S is going to stay the same, which is to say barely any, and technically present. But the image quality they think is going to go up a lot. They got the new dual LED thing, which most photographers that I've read, they said, yeah, it's the sort of thing you pay, you know, you pay $600-$700 for a really good flash that can do varying colors of ambient light from natural all the way up to, whatever the current one is. Natural sunlight versus internal fluorescent lights and stuff. Actually, they're saying the fluorescent lights is probably the one thing that the iPhone will have the biggest trouble with. But fluorescents don't tend to produce bad pictures to begin with. It's really, you know, your internal, candlelight, firelight, incandescent light. Those are the problems. Those are where the iPhone had problems with the flash.
Yeah.
So, you know, big improvements, which is pretty cool. They can do slow-mo now. Well, bullet time and stuff. That's pretty exciting. It's one of those things where you go back.
My camera's pretty good, though. My camera's pretty good, except like you said with the zoom. That'd be really nice. Total side note there.
Yeah.
Can't help but notice this video's being weird. But couldn't help but notice you're wearing a Tough Mudder shirt there. Is that new?
No, man. I've had this shirt since last year.
Is that the same one? When is your Tough Mudder happening?
Not next weekend, but the weekend coming out. So the last weekend in September, and I've got the place rented. I've that we're gonna stay. Got my friends all signed up. Pretty stoked. For those of you who don't know what a Tough Mudder is, it's an 11-mile obstacle relay up at North Star in Lake Tahoe, near Lake Tahoe. Starts at 5,000 feet, go up to 7,000 feet, come back down over the course of 11 miles. It's tough. Which is why I got the Tough Mudder. I was training today. But Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And once again, you know, from now we're kind of getting into the world of just incremental improvements on the camera, and everybody's going after different stuff, you know, and everybody brings different stuff to the table, with the exception of Samsung. They're the clear HTC One has got one of the best cameras out there for just straight up Android. You know, the Lumia 1020, best hardware coupled with software. iPhone, they think, is going to have the best overall picture quality, but it has obvious limitations of zoom. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's really interesting getting all these different, you know, everybody's taking their different approach, you know, trying to maximize limited hardware capabilities. And it's exciting. It's cool to see all the different competition. I don't know if the camera would make me want to go out and run, but, you know, I'm not going to run out and buy a new iPhone because of the camera, but it's definitely a perk. And then the last piece of the new iPhone puzzle that they made a big deal of was the 64-bit A7, which
I still only half understand why that's a big deal.
I'll explain it to you. It's not a terribly big deal. yet. What happens is, so basic premise of you know, your bit is how many you know, ones and zeros in a row it can carry or it can keep track of. And the number that is being tracked with binary numbers is exponentially grow. So if you've got two numbers, you can keep track of four. You've got three bits, you know, you've got nine, it goes up. So by doubling the number of bits, you've exponentially exploded how big of a number you can hold. And what's cool about that is that if you're talking about registers, if you're talking about memory locations in RAM, with 32 bits, you can only actually keep track of about 3.5 billion or 3.5 gigs worth of actual memory locations. You increase that to 64 bits, and now all of a sudden you can do like you know, hundreds and hundreds of gigs. You can get it to terabytes of RAM locations, way beyond where we are. But, you know, obviously, since everybody's running 64 or is running 8 and 6 gig RAM nowadays on their computers, that's important. And that was really the biggest reason why they pushed to move over to 64 gig or 64 bit processors in OS X and in Windows, was to allow for more RAM. And there's a huge improvement in performance when you do that. Very noticeable, and it's worth the while if you add extra RAM. Well, the iPhone's not going to have any more RAM in it. It's still going to have like 1.5, 2 gigs of RAM. So why would you put the 64-bit? Well,
why would you do that?
The other advantage of it, and that you can take advantage if you do this, is you can increase the number of internal registers, aka your cache, and you can also do integer math, bigger integer math. So instead of being able to do, you know, you can add and subtract exponentially larger numbers. So for computationally heavy things, if you have a larger cache, what you can do is it basically allows you to do a bunch of math and a bunch of processes within the core of the CPU without going to RAM, which is cool because going to RAM takes extra time. So if you stay within cache, you can do it incredibly fast. But you'd have to do something that would fill up the cache, which most stuff that you do on the iPhone doesn't. And the other thing is bigger integer math. There are times, there are programs that really need to take advantage of that. Once again, most don't. You'll see small speed improvements across the board. But the really big thing here is, and what they've done is it's effectively allowed them to push over to 64-bit compilers. So now Xcode will compile into 64-bit. They've moved over to the 64-bit languages, and they've done it in a way that only Apple can, because everything's done internally and they can control it very, very easily. Everybody's going to build thing. You'll build one chunk of code, and Xcode will automatically turn it into 32-bit code and 64-bit code, you know, instruction sets. And it'll take advantage of the different hardware, you know, as it goes on the fly, which is cool. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like that, you know, this is a huge, this is a big thing. It'll help. But the big thing here is this is classic Apple. Why did Apple move over to the Bluetooth 4.0? There wasn't really any advantage to it at the time. Nobody was taking advantage of it. And, you know, still really nobody's taking advantage of it until, boom, iBeacons. iBeacons just got launched, and it's this, like, really, it is the NFC equivalent. It's better than NFC. It's got all these huge advantages. So it's just been sitting there. People have been waiting for it, waiting for Apple to take advantage of it, open up APIs. You're starting to see, you know, the watches take advantage of it. It's this low-power version of Bluetooth. It's cool. It works. And it's now present in every purchasable model of the iPhone because it's been around since the 4S, which is interesting to think about. They finally introduce APIs to really take advantage of it once every new iPhone that you could possibly buy will come with it automatically. So that gives you kind of a timeline perspective. Same thing. What was the other one that, you know, iTunes, it's like iTunes started out with just music, but it basically was the, you know, camel's nose in the tent of Windows. It allowed them to get, you know, it allowed them to get a foothold in that and start people like me down this road of, well, I might as well get the iPhone instead of the Samsung Galaxy S because it's, you know, or even more importantly, the biggest reason I got the iPhone over the Lumia was because of iTunes. You know, and you know, you start with music and it turns into this entire ecosystem, and you know, 5 years later you realize, wow. And they were really thinking. They were thinking ahead. What this is it's you're going to get a definite performance boost. It'll, you know, it is a good thing. Is it enough to buy a new phone? Absolutely not. Will it make a huge difference in 3 years when you can only get 64-bit apps and there's an actual advantage to it because they'll have enough RAM and everything? Well, yeah, and their entire ecosystem will be ready for it because they plan 3 years ahead. That's why it's a big deal, because we now see the roadmap for the next generations of iPhones. And what's interesting here is that Samsung, not to be outdone, announced on Thursday or Friday, they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to have the next Galaxy. It's going to have a 64-bit processor, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, okay, Samsung.
We won't have a finger sensor, but we got 64-bit.
Yeah, well, you know what? Give it time. I'll bet it has a finger sensor. But everybody's like, you know, the problem with that is that Android runs on top of the Unix kernel. The Unix kernel you're using is a 32-bit instruction set. The Android virtual machine, which is really Java virtual machine, that's all a 32-bit instruction set. All of the apps for the entire ecosystem, 32-bit instruction set. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to create this chip. You're going to add this chip in that's designed for 64 bits, which is less efficient. It doesn't run as fast as a 32-bit processor because it's got more stuff going on, and you're going to run it with code that it's not optimized for. 64-bit processors only run faster when they run 64-bit code. And you're like, you just sit there and you go, so this is like, that is purely, simply, without exception, for the purpose of a spec shootout. They don't want Apple to be able to say something that they don't have, they're better than them. And which is just classic Samsung, even though it's not only is it not going to give you a performance boost, it's probably going to give you a performance hit. And you just sit there and you go, oh, Samsung, come on. Like, you guys are better than that, you know? And I don't know.
They're fierce competitors.
Well, they're fierce competitors. Yeah, I like it.
We're going to say whatever it takes.
Yeah.
We don't care.
But it's not, you know, once again, it goes back to the thing of it's not about actual performance for them. It's about what can we put on a spec sheet. Everything
well,
they do
it's
is
not
what they
even
can
what can we
sheet.
Put on a spec sheet. It's, you know, what I mean, they are not afraid to slog down in the muck and to attack Apple head on, to make fun of them, to, you know, do whatever they can to try to blunt them. They are not, how do I want to say this? They're not trying to make the best phone possible. They're just trying to beat Apple.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
You know, which are two fundamentally different things.
Yeah. And,
I mean, in some cases they do align, but not always. And this is a case where you could tell. No.
And it's one of those things where it's like from a hardware perspective, you know, the Tegra chip inside of the Galaxy S4 is from a spec perspective, it is far and beyond anything that or beyond the A6. And now, you know, props to Nvidia, because it's a great chip that they designed. But it's, you know, performance wise, which is just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the same argument we've talked about before. Yeah. So this M7 chip, in addition to the A7, what does the M stand for? Mac, is that what that is?
Motion.
Motion, got it. So that tracks all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah, that's your gyroscope, your accelerometer, your pedometer, your all your
GPS turbos. Is that in there too? Or
I don't believe so.
That's a different thing.
GPS is part of the antenna chipset, okay. Qualcomm stuff. So I think it's different. What's interesting about this is that it's a discrete chip.
Which
I really
is good
really
for the battery, right?
Well, that's the claim. And the thing is it's like the fingerprint scanner software. You know, the actual scanner is obviously it's discrete. It's not part of it's part of the push button. But the hardware that runs it, even though it's discrete part of the CPU, it's part of the CPU. It's on the same piece of silicon. Why didn't they put this on the same piece of silicon? And there's the leading theory is that it's because they designed this chip for the iWatch. It's an incredibly low power motion tracker.
Oh, and they're testing it out in the phone?
Well, it's not only are they testing it out, but it's we have it, why not put it in there?
Huh.
You know, it's already been designed.
Interesting.
Let's do it. I do know that CMOS, which is a type of silicon production. What does it actually stand for? I can't remember.
I always read Cosmos.
Yeah. Complementary metal oxide semiconductors. It is the process by which it is gyroscopes, accelerometers, pedometers are all made. And oftentimes those are discrete chips because the process is so significantly different from building a classic transistor that it requires it. Obviously, you know, like, you know, these are sophisticated chips. You can put transistors on them, but it's entirely possible that the process of making the A7 is not complementary with the process of making the accelerometer, and where the accelerometer and the gyroscope and everything were like different chips that they bought and put into the package and took up a bunch of room. They said if we were to take all of these chips that use all of this different, you know, all of these, they take up all of the space, if we were to put them all into the same piece of silicon with the power management tools all there and put it into one little package, we'd save a bunch of room, we'd save a bunch of money, and we'd just drop it in there. So it's not necessary, and then it has the added benefit of if they wanted to make an iWatch, they could put it into the iWatch. That's my gut on what's going on there, is that it was more of a manufacturing thing that played itself up well as a marketing thing. And whereas it's not necessarily it's cool, it's very cool, but it's not this huge radical, you know, shift in technology. It's more of a, we figured out how to manufacture this in a way that had a bunch of advantages and we wanted to brag about it. But you know, I still want the iWatch, so let's see if we can afford it now that I bought a car. And the last thing I do want to talk about kind of quickly, I guess, at this point, because y'all are going to get it in a couple of weeks on Wednesday, is iOS 7. It's awesome.
What do you like about it? Again, you've downloaded it. You've been playing with it for the last week. You're a developer, which is kind of cool.
One of the things that I really, really like about it, I'll be honest about it. I'll be honest.
Please,
the thing
honest.
That I like most about it is the candy wrapper, the transition graphics and stuff. They didn't change a whole lot. They didn't add a lot, but it's like everything kind of like zooms in and out. And they talked about this idea that like things would like come up on top and move over and shift left and right. And that sounds cool and stuff. But one of the example I like to give is when you double hit the home button, it pulls back your main pane and it brings up your taskbar.
Yeah.
All the different apps. Well, it used to come up from the top. Now what you do is you have this running list left to right of all the different cards that you have. And what it does is it gives you this visual thing of, oh, okay, that's where it all is. And when you get a reminder, like let's say like somebody sends you a text. The text comes up, you hit the button. What it does is it pans your main pane that you're on, it pans it right. The text messaging app comes in from the left. And then when you double-click on the task manager, guess what's to your right still? It's that last app you were on. Huh. And what they did is they just holistically thought about where everything is. You know, what makes a change, you know, there's two aspects to operating systems, familiarity and intuitiveness. And a lot of times I make the argument people confuse the two. Windows Vista was intuitive but not familiar. Windows 7 was finally familiar because Vista had been around long enough where it felt intuitive. Windows 8 is not familiar or particularly intuitive, which is giving it kind of a rough – until you get familiar with it, and then the kind of non-intuitive parts of it aren't as big of a deal.
Yeah.
And then people like it a lot once they're familiar with it, even though it's arguably not intuitive. One of the big thing that they've done here is that there is a tremendous amount of intuition, and it's all done, all achieved via transitional graphics.
Huh.
It's this thing sits on top of this thing, and when you zoom into something or you zoom out of it, or it pans left, pans right, you pull it up from the body, pull it up from the – and all of a sudden I just felt like – a lot of the tools that I've been using for a long time that nobody else takes advantage of it, like it's like, you know, double clicking and using the different music stuff and where things are located, where I've just got it ingrained in my brain where it is, all of a sudden the iPhone's showing you where it is all the time, every time you use it. And it looks really cool. It looks really, really cool. You know, you kind of get it does all those Gaussian blur things and the gradient and the overlays and the transparencies. It does it all really well. And it kind of makes all of your other apps look ugly, which is exciting because everybody's going to update all their other apps and make them look all pretty like the iPhone. I think it's interesting that the other thing is one of the, you know, there are three things that I liked about the Lumia 920 when I used it. I really liked the camera. I really liked the virtual keyboard, and I really liked the overall aesthetic. Is the aesthetic enough to buy a phone? Not at all. Is it enjoyable? Definitely. They ripped the aesthetic off like crazy. It's all flat colors now. There's no shadows. There's no roundings, or instead of like hard corners, they got the rounded corners. That's how you know it's iOS and not Windows Phone. But I like the aesthetic a lot. The one thing that I have to say, they changed the autocorrect, and it makes me want to throw the phone across the wall. I have misspelled so much this last week. It's been driving me nuts. And I have a particularly bad like spelling and vocabulary, like spelling mostly, spelling grammar, you know, and I've really, really relied on the iPhone to kind of – A, the virtual keyboard's not perfect, and I'm not perfect – and the autocorrect on the iPhone, I worked well with it. I had become tuned to it. It had become tuned to me. We were meshing really well, where I was able to fake being competent at English really well. And in the last week, it's become clearly obvious that I'm not as good at English as I should be. And it's always like – it's always after I hit the send button and I can't delete it or edit it that I'm like,
right,
awesome.
That should tell you something.
Great. Yeah, well, and the problem is that it got me into the habit of not having to do that, and I have to change my expectations, which takes a little while to, you know, adapt. But
so, what do you think of the new Siri voice?
It's close enough. I mean, it's, you know, they talk about how it's
over to the guy, huh? All right.
No, I kept it with the. Oh, I want the British voice back. That's what I miss.
I know. Brits. I know.
But. No, I kept it with the chick Siri.
So, just so you know, I did not pre-order the 5C, and I am not going to buy the 5S.
Oh, baby.
Even though I could.
Yes, you could.
It wasn't quite a big enough change for me. I'm still very happy with the 4S.
Freak.
It still works well. Since they're still selling it, I still know I'm going to get all the updates.
That's true.
So, I feel good about that. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see where I'm sitting a year from now on what I decide to do.
See, but I will almost certainly not get the 5S or the 5C, but I will almost certainly get the iPhone. So, or I'll get a new phone. You know what? I'm not going to do that. Apple, I love you guys, but I'll give everybody else another go. That was pretty fun. As I keep buying more and more stuff through iTunes, I'll probably end up with the iPhone again.
But, you can still enjoy the, trying out different things.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Okay, all right.
But
all right.
The real question for me is, do you buy the subsidized or the unsubsidized phone? Hopefully I'll be in
your plan.
I say, hopefully I'll be. I think if you can afford it, it's almost stupid to buy the subsidized phone nowadays.
Why?
Because you can over the course of a 2-year contract, you can save quite a few hundreds of dollars by buying the unsubsidized phone. You can really shop around, but it requires you to change your plan. That's the big thing.
Yeah, you can't do it with AT&T or Verizon or Sprint. Otherwise, because they don't give you. They don't give you a discount on your plan just because you bought an unlocked phone.
Right. But to me, honestly, it's the unlimited LTE. That's really what I want. I'm willing to pay more for that. And you can't get that through Verizon and AT&T. It drives me crazy. It drives me nuts. So, but, you know, that's at least a year from now. So, whatever. We'll see what happens.
So, sticking with the same iOS vein, Apple has confirmed that cards for iOS is going to be discontinued.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is.
A super cool app where you could take a photo and then turn that photo into a card.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And add an address and, you know, hit the send button. And I forget how much it was. It was like $3 or $4. And then they would print and mail a physical card to whoever you put in your contact for that. So,
are they using HP printers? So why do you think it was super cool?
I do know that they used HP printers, but that's not super important.
Okay.
No, we used it. So like when Jesse and I went to Las Vegas and we did our vacation, we were like, oh, we should send postcards to families. And I was like, yeah, no. So what we did was we had someone else take our photo in front of the New York hotel. And we got our photo, we sat down, set up the card, picked what it was, wrote our little message, and then, we sent it while sitting there. And it was like, you didn't have to find a postcard, it was personalized, you didn't have to find stamps, you didn't have to find a mailbox, you just kind of did it all right there. And then they got it, and, with notifications, we could tell exactly when it arrived, which was cool. So we've done that a few times. We did one, I think it was like for Father's Day or something. I went into, photos that both of our dads had sent, and then Jesse and I, we photoshopped ourselves and Vinny into the photo. So like one of them was like for our dad when he had won that Flycasters award, so it was a picture of him holding the award. And so I photoshopped Jesse and myself, and then instead of the award, I put Vinny in there instead.
It
was holding Vinny, and then I think the comment was like, "Remember that one time you won that award? Yeah, that was awesome, huh?" you know, just like, and it was same with like with her dad. We had one of him like fishing, and so I put us into the boat with him, and instead of a fish that he was holding, it was holding Vinny again. So remember that one time you got that fish? Yeah, that was awesome. But we had those sent as cards, and super cool. It was so kind of a bummer to see that go. I know there's a bunch of third-party apps that were already kind of doing it.
Yeah, and doesn't HP actually have like a straight-up competitive product with that?
No, not really. But I'm HP. You should be thinking about doing it because it was a good idea. Just not big enough volume for Apple to worry about it.
Right. Doesn't merit it.
Be my guess. Also on the app front, McDonald's is playing around with a new mobile phone. You can order and pay with your phone, and then you just pick it up at the store. It sounds like something McDonald's would do.
What are they doing? Sorry.
Don't get distracted here. It's a McDonald's app where you order your food and you pay within the app, and then you just pick it up at the store.
That's awesome. I totally take advantage of that.
I know. I was like, this is sweet. I was telling Jessie that. She's like, that's the dumbest thing ever. I was like, what?
Yeah, they're so fast already. That's not really a huge perk. Whereas I do take advantage of those types of apps at restaurants where I know that they take a little while.
What I like about it is they, in some ways, they're locking you in, right? You go, I'm hungry. And you drive around, and there's a chance that there's a Burger King or a Carl's Jr. across the street. And now what they do is you go, oh, I'm hungry. Oh, well, look on the app. Oh, look, there's one two blocks away. You order your food. You've already paid. You're not going to Burger King.
I will be honest. I am a little too pretentious to have a McDonald's app on my iPhone. I got the 7-Eleven app, and so I wanted to – I love Slurpees. I have a problem. And after 24 hours, it's like, I just can't have this on my phone. Like, I don't – what if somebody saw it?
Jeez.
I'd feel the same way about McDonald's, McDaniels. But the other issue that really arises with that is that I've eaten at McDonald's once in the last, 8 months. So I wouldn't really take advantage of it too much. Once again, because of my pretension.
Fair enough.
You know, but it's cool. I'm glad they're doing it because it's, you know, I think everybody's going to do it eventually. And McDonald's is often the leader in that sort of thing, you know.
So in public/private news, Dell is going private. What is it? They're giving the money back to the shareholders, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That one works. Dell, you knew you were going to eat those words someday. So, for those of you who have forgotten, when Apple was in trouble, Dell's advice to them was to give money back to the shareholders and close the doors. Or close the doors and give the money back to the shareholders. Yes. And so Dell isn't closing, but they are going private so they can do their turnaround outside of the light of the public eye. They had a whole bunch of hurdles, and it was a big pain in the rear end from what I understand, but they were able to raise $24.9 billion, and they're going to make it happen.
Well, what's frustrating, too, is the dude that was, like, the biggest stick in the mud for the whole process actually was, like, it was going to happen 1 week, and, like, everybody was like, wow, they're going to go private this 1 week, and I can't remember the dude's name all of a sudden, but he was like...
Carl Icahn.
Carl Icahn, he held the whole thing up. So he's the problem. He was, like, suing them, said basically...
Well, what happened is they did a deal for a smaller amount than 24.9. And he was like, whoa, 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 that's way too cheap. My shares are worth more than that. And so, they were like, well, forget you, we're going on. And so his was like, oh, no, you're not. I'm going to raise my own capital. And he was like, I can raise more money than you, and then I'll buy it for more.
Yeah.
I'll basically offer more than you are, Michael Dell. And so that was where it erupted in this huge fight. And then he put like this essentially – vote of no confidence on Michael Dell, and you shouldn't even be the one that's doing it. And so eventually Michael Dell and his cohorts were like, okay, we'll figure out how to do more money. And so they upped the ante, and so he was like, all right, I'm good. You can do it now.
Icahn is a shark, dude. He is brutal. And it's one of those things where it's like, dude, yeah, he is a, I'd love to have him on my team, because he's a monster. But don't get on the, if you're on the other side of him, he's going to beat the snot out of you. And as soon as the day he got paid, pretty much it was Dell went private on Tuesday. Like, it actually happened on Tuesday. So he got his money. And that day, Apple announced that the iPhone was, you know, collapsing. And, or, you know, that's not what I meant. They announced the iPhone and their stock collapsed, dropped 5%. And Icahn went, well, look at all this money that I have, and went out and just went on a buying spree for Apple stock. And you're just like, oh, Tim Cook is going to be in over his head with this dude.
Yeah, which it was funny. I got a couple notes from people that are like, oh my gosh, the price dropped. Did you see that? They must not be happy with the iPhone. I was like, are you kidding me? This happens every single time.
Yeah,
this
it just
is not
doesn't...
a surprise.
You know,
it's what
just...
happens. We all get excited, then they show what it really is, and the price instantly drops.
I do think that it was worse this time than it was in the past because of the whole cheap iPhone thing. I feel like that's the sort of thing. You know,
yeah, but I loved where someone was like, you know what, you that's a no-win situation, okay? Because you come out and go, okay, no cheap iPhone. They go, oh, we thought it would be cheap, down the price. Or you come out with a cheap iPhone, they're like, yeah, we're happy, until you come out with your earnings report and you show that margins are tighter now as a result of the cheap iPhone, and they hammer your stock price. Like, come
well,
on,
I was
you can't
say-
win.
What I was going to say, I don't disagree with the strategy that they're taking, mostly because I'm not an investor and it doesn't affect me directly. So it would be really ridiculous for me to disagree with it. What I was going to say is I feel like it's the sort of thing that Steve Jobs and I hate. You know, I oftentimes try to not pull the Steve Jobs would have done it differently card, because – you know, that's just a ridiculous argument to make. You know, who knows what he would have done. But I feel like this is something he would have done differently and better. Definitely, which is they would have leaked 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago that it's not going to be a cheap iPhone. And that was a rumor that just hung out there for so long. And it was just that it became expected. It became, well, obviously, the cheap iPhone is going to be the cheap iPhone. Why would it not be the cheap iPhone?
Well, I honestly think that Cook wanted to be like, look, you guys got it wrong. Take that.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, well, because he talked about doubling down on leaks and all that stuff, and I think that he, you know, that was his way of getting back in it. So
interesting. Okay, maybe.
Other public news, Twitter tweeted that that they said, we've confidentially submitted an S-1 to the SEC for a planned IPO. This tweet does not constitute an offer for any securities for sale. So Twitter's gone public.
Woohoo!
Confidentially, if you know what I mean. Which at first, it's kind of, you know, it's not confident because they tweeted it, which is funny. But apparently, a little more digging, if you do a small enough IPO or like something like that, you can do a confidential one where you don't tell anybody what the amount is or something weird like that. Which I'm like, does it matter? Which what people tend to think is it's because their revenue isn't really that big.
Right.
Which is why they can do it. We'll learn a lot more as the spotlight turns off of Apple and then back on the Twitter as they're getting ready to do their stuff, which I think they're going to do by the end of the year. So,
cool. That's exciting.
That's coming up. Yeah, yeah. It should be fun. What was the other? Oh, yeah, yeah. So TechCrunch Disrupt in San Francisco also happened this week, which is an opportunity for a bunch of startups to you know, talk about how awesome they are and try to get money and win stuff like that. So the team that won this year, and then we'll talk about the runner-up, was a company called Layer, LAYER. And they won $50,000. Congratulations, guys.
Nice. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, they went up against a whole bunch of startups, and you know they're cool. But essentially what they've created is a communications platform, so think IM, think voice calls and video calls, that you can add to your app with like 10 lines of code.
Whoa.
So you no longer have to, you know, so if you have a bunch of users and it makes sense for them to chat to each other, you don't have to try to build that in anymore. You just layer on top. The awesome. The example they used was like, you know, with paying, right? For payments, you're like PayPal, couple lines of code, cut and paste, boom. You've got yourself a shopping cart ready to go.
Nice.
So like, so they're trying to do the same thing for communication stuff. So they won, which is cool. And then the other one, the runner-up, was a company called Dryft, D-R-Y-F-T. The guys who made this are, or the, one of the co-founders is the guy who invented, what's it called? Swipe. Which is, you know, the one on the Android devices where you just swipe your hands around, you don't actually type anything.
Right.
So that guy who created that, they're coming out with Dryft, which is for tablets, essentially. So it's still keyboard-based, but it's a keyboard for your tablet instead. So Swipe was for, like, a single hand. Dryft is for two hands. And so, like, one of the things that it'll do is you put down your – if you put down your eight fingers, it then knows where your two index fingers are and will position the keyboard over them. And, nice. You know, so it conforms to who you are. And you start typing like you would as if you were a touch typer. And if your hands start to move, the keyboard will, you know, they start to notice, you know what, you're a little off on the K there. You know, you're starting to move over to the right a little bit. It will actually adjust that right side of the keyboard so that the keys fall underneath your fingers again.
I like that a lot.
So, yeah, yeah. And then the other one that they were talking about, which I thought was interesting, as I said, you pick a word like in or on, where the I and the O are right next to each other. It's like, and it's super hard to tell which one did you mean.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so if it's in the middle, you're like, dude, I don't know. You know, you can't let context tell you. So they also use the accelerometer, and he goes, and what we know is that your index finger hits harder than your pinky finger. And so if you're spelling the word, you know, in, and we feel that it's a hard one, which we know because we've been kind of paying attention to how you type, we know that you meant the word in. If it's kind of soft, we know you meant the word on.
That's cool. I mean, because Apple's iMusic thing for I can't remember. I think it's GarageBand. Doesn't matter. Their music app for the iPad took advantage of the accelerometer. Same basic technology in order to the harder you hit, the louder the notes. They could do different loudness of notes, which everybody thought was really clever at the time. I mean, this is using the same idea. That's cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, so they're talking about, you know, selling it or licensing it to OEMs, which means we'll never see it on an Apple device, but you'll see it on a bunch of Android devices, and I'm sure it will be super ridiculously popular. I do feel like keyboards are a place that can be dramatically improved. I just listened to you complaining about autocorrect, and that's still a place that's ripe for redisruption, if you will. It was great that we got them. And what was interesting too is that they talked about like typing, and they said that it used to be when you're on a regular keyboard, like the average was like 60 words per minute, which I was like, huh, not me, but okay. You know, so like it was fast, and that what they found was, you know, with typewriters and then the keyboards, it slowly kept growing to 60, and now it's kind of drop off a cliff when tablets were introduced. So like it's like way down. So he's like, so productivity's down. And so his whole thing was like, we need to figure out how to get typing and productivity go fast again. And then you won't mind typing on your tablet because it's just as fast as on a keyboard. So that was kind of what their goal was and what they were working towards. And it sounded like that's some cool ideas. I mean, clearly this dude gets it. His original, like, job or whatever, you know, passion that he did before keyboards was he worked with handicapped folks or people who were disabled or injured to teach them how to type again and to think about typing strategies. So like he worked with Stephen Hawking on, you know, here's how you can write essentially. So his background was thinking about typing and communicating with the written word in ways that are, you know, you don't have working 10 digits type stuff. And, and they said what was super interesting about it is in his background, it was all about getting people who couldn't type normally to essentially type normally.
Right.
Excuse me. And now they're like, now we're going the opposite way. Now with tablets, we're trying to get normal people to type as if they were disabled. because it's genuinely faster and right. It'll actually go better. But yeah, pretty interesting. So they were the runner up, but I thought it was still an interesting application.
Yeah, definitely.
They're both in development. They're not available yet, but yeah, they were the winners of TechCrunch Disrupt San Francisco 2013.
Woohoo! Cool. I like that. Yeah. So I guess I'll throw my last two stories in really super fast. Microsoft released an iPhone bashing video that we'll link. I don't know if it's worth it. It's kind of visual in that it's incredibly embarrassing. It's just kind of a... Everybody we don't need to play it because it's kind of long, and it's just they basically go through and mock the whole iPhone creation process and everything. And
nice.
Like, you guys, what are you doing with your life right now? Like, you're not exactly in a place to just brutally mocking like that. And, I think they're still upset about the whole I'm a Mac, I'm a PC thing. they haven't really gotten over it. And so now they're like, oh, it's our turn to be mean. And it just comes off as, I don't know. It comes off as bad as the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, but without the charisma of two great actors or the comedy writing of the team. It's just a much worse quality with all of the juvenile nature of the whole thing. So it's kind of embarrassing. The other thing is that Microsoft got their arms twisted into releasing Windows 8.1 for developers early. They were not going to release a beta for developers to be able to start building 8.1 apps. Microsoft's never done that before. They've always released Windows versions early for developers, and nobody can quite figure out why they weren't and what the heck is going on in Redmond. It's just another one of those, like, what are you guys doing up there? Like, it's, you know, they're in such disarray. Nobody can really figure out what the holistic plan is, and there's just been so much rapid change that and just flailing trying to figure out what the next step to take is. This sort of thing gets like left off the, you know, it's just a stupid mistake. Why would you scorn your developers like that? Why wouldn't you let them give them a chance to have the apps ready when 8.1 launches? It's craziness, you know. And it's weird. Something's, you know, Microsoft really needs to get their act together, you know, and they're pulling a Sony right now, and it's about time that they, you know, they get a new CEO.
Well, they're working on it.
Yeah.
They're working on it.
Hopefully they don't replace them with somebody, you know, who's worse. But
we will see.
Yes, we will. Exciting we'll times.
See. All right. Cool beans, man. Cool beans. Apple, that happened this week, along with a couple other things. But it was good. Good teardown. I liked it. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlow. And what did we do? How did you start it?
iOS Brother.
Okay. Not one of my
more creative ones.
That's all right. So I am James Furlow, and my non-creative brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.